Okay, PR. Yeah, so that's some humor here. I already had that scene this summer, but I could probably add something to it now. It is, oh, it's so good to be based on real events, because this is another real event. When Pia sits there in that coolest of the cool Stockholm artist clubs, where all the cool artists hang out, musicians and cool people in the artsy world. He's sitting there, and he's sober, which in itself is weird, a weird thing to be there. It's down in the dungeons, you know, in this old townish basement down there, whatever you would call it, crypt-looking place where the cool kids like to hang out Friday, Saturday night. The beer is flowing and the whatever smoke and pills go around are flowing freely. And there he is sitting, and he is completely sober, no drugs at all in his body and mind, just looking at all this. And this is 1977, autumn. And looking at his friends coming in, and hi. And he didn't realize it at that time, but he had started to become a little bit respected and attractive with the ladies, and you know, someone there who you want to hang out with. He was playing in a band, I heard also, and he was a pretty good artist. Yes, I was at his home, and wow, you know. Because he actually was. And anyway, so he's sitting there, and then comes this really cool girl up there who he has met before in that place, where she just jumped up in his lap and they started kissing each other, and not much more happened than a little kissing that night. And then she used to come to his home, sit there at night talking, and nothing more had happened really. And then she comes in here with a boy, a guy. And then, you know, I have, where I spoke about Pio here, more about his background, was that he's sitting there, and he's a cool guy now. And he's good looking, and he's an artist, you know, and he's a musician, and yeah. And the girl he's with, she's smart. And she likes, like this type of girls do, these artsy girls hanging around, you know, the real beautiful ones, hanging around in these artist dungeons and circles. They like to play, it's their kind of art, you know. And they play with the men, so she was now playing. And our Pia could understand that, or feel it, or sense it, because she was interested in him, and he kind of was hesitant about her, had some feeling that she was a little darkish for him. She was moving around a little bit darker areas of the world. So his intuition just held him back. So then she's maybe now trying to make him jealous or something like that. So she's here with this other guy, who's also a good-looking guy. And, you know, she can pick the most good-looking guys in town. So, and she does. And then she plays with them. And that's what P could sense and didn't want to get involved with. But now, anyway, here he was. Here they were. So, the girl introduces this other guy to Pio, and Pio to this other guy. And Pio, he just says hello, and they both say, and then Pio picks up a cigarette. This is what actually happened. And this could be used the way it happened. Because, and he has no matches, he realizes. So he asks, and the other guy, he picks up his his matchbox, takes out a match, lights it, and then looks at Pio with this kind of smirky look, I'm going to do something, artistic, something challenging, something very, very special to, I cannot just sit here and be an ordinary guy. I have to do something crazy artist thing. And then, here, of course, he sees Pio as a rival, and this just basic archetypal rival dramas acts out here, or he starts acting it out. Because he holds that match, so instead of holding it over so that Pio can just hold his cigarette over it and ignite it, he holds that match between his fingers for a while, and then hands over the match to Pio, where there's not so much left of it, that it would be very difficult to grab it light your cigarette with it and put it down in the ashtray without burning your fingers. And that guy had probably invented that trick to use, to get an upper hand over his rivals or something. And Pia takes that he takes that match and he realizes this immediately. This guy is going to play something. So now I'm supposed to do something crazy, artistic, and tricky, and smart back, This is the drama that is going to play out. And this girl is sitting there very satisfied, now looking at the two guys, of course, understanding perfectly what is going on because she's a smart girl. And she also somewhere, understands deeper down that Pio understands that she understands. I mean, it's just like a subtle thing between them there. And then Pio just takes the match and lights a cigarette and puts the match in the ashtray. And he could do that, he realized, if he just didn't hesitate or think too much, just take it, light, put it there. You don't have time to come up with a plan for something cool and tricky to do to show him something, that you're also a cool guy. But just say thank you. And he said thank you. Take the match, light the cigarette, and then poof, in the ashtray, no burned finger. And that girl, and he just thinks those things. You can show from his mind there, that I'm supposed to do this, and he expects that, and now I don't have time, I would burn my finger, I just put it there. And anyway, who cares? He just skips that, getting into this. Because that's also a game that sometimes guys get into when they are drunk. They develop these little cafe tricks, that they call them, that they play against each other, some of them, you know, especially with the girls, to show who's the strongest and toughest and smartest and most artistic, crazy, and all of that. So we can play with all of those things there. But the thing is that because now Pio is not drunk and is just looking at this, seeing it as a drunken, dreamy game, that those who are there think it's very, you know, now we are very cool there. We're doing a, you know, very smart, cool game. But if you're not drunk, then you just see that it's completely stupid, because you get completely stupid from alcohol. So he just doesn't care anymore about it, and you put the match there, and, you know, and that's it. And speak a little, and then the two of them, they move on. But then how, if you show it maybe from the girl's part, and that's what I'm thinking now, I never thought from her side before, and from, you know, and from that other guy's part, he was like, from that inside that kind of game, power game point of view, that Pio didn't care about, it would look like the coolest move you could do. You know, the cool in the sense of really cool. You know, you don't play the game. You know, that's really someone with self-confidence and this and that. So he completely won that little duel. And he didn't even know that. He didn't realize that until like 50 years later or something. So I'm just thinking this little thing can go in there, and I should maybe have spoken it right into us. No, this is good. Where was I? Yeah. Yeah. My idea was to put this story, but not just like that, but in that little short action there, I could put thoughts that, you know, little philosophical thoughts or whatever that Pio may have, and what the guy may have, and what she may have. So we just use that little short situation there for telling a deeper story, maybe about each and every, you know, every one of them, and Pio's situation there, maybe the guy, I don't know, and the girl, and connect that to our bigger existential story here, to, so to say. And we could continue developing her. What did I call her? Sophia or something? Sophia. Anyway, And then, then her character, I just thought of, there's a little different thing here, character development department maybe. We can then build her upon, well, you could say, two pieces of historic evidence. One actual evidence, and that is what she herself told him about herself. You know, that she was involved, had been involved with prostitution before she had tried it out, and that she had some involvement with heroin. And more than that, he didn't know by then. And her, but he had felt that here was a sexual darkness. Where he didn't feel at home. This is the only way he could express it. But there are people we know where he had seen a dream, maybe news. In magazines too, although he didn't read porn magazines, much at all. But he had this image of people doing strange sexuality. Surrealistic in a way, as he thought. But also with elements of S&M. But in some kind of clinic environment, as in hospitals. It had been a strange dream he had one night, seeing such people in kinky dress, if at all, posing as if for photographs. And he saw the photographs one after another, as from some strange fetishist kink porn magazine that he had never seen. It was a strange dream, but in that dream, she was. And then he realized they weren't for each other. She was living in another world. Which it then, as he also realized only far later in his life, the world she lived in. Or much like it. What could be worse? And being a beautiful smart woman hooked on heroin and working as a prostitute. Anyway, I got sucked into that story again, but it's already been told, but maybe here I get into it, can add something, or maybe it's just the same as I said last time, so whatever.